Obviously, Sonny Gray, Yu Darvish. I'll be watching that. I feel like I've when I do my news shifts on Roto-World, I feel like half of them right now about Sonny Gray or Yu Darvish, whether they're going to be traded or not, which teams are interested. So definitely tracking those guys as much as possible.
Forever, a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined by my usual co-host, Mike Gianella of the BP Fantasy Team. You can read both of us at baseballprospectus.com. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of our content. If you want, you can follow us on Twitter. That's the best way to get in touch with us. Mike is at Mike Gianella. I am at George Bissell. And to wrap up the housekeeping, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Radio App, or wherever you get the podcast. You know, if you love the show and you want to support us, that's the best way to do it. It's free. We do it pretty much every week, sometimes multiple shows a week. So that's the best way you could show your support for the podcast. So, Mike, what's going on? We've had a lot of interesting developments here, and we're going to get to a lot of them. What a week so far.
Yeah, I can't say this is the most exciting trade deadline that we've seen, but it's been a better one than I would have expected. I think a lot of people thought that it would be a quiet deadline or there wouldn't be a lot of movement, and already we've had some trades and twists and turns we haven't expected.
Right. What's weird about it is it's kind of staggered. We already had the Quintana deal and JD Martinez. It feels like we're waiting for Sonny Gray to move, but maybe Yu Darvish gets dealt, and we'll see. So a lot to talk about on this show. We've got some injuries, some call-ups, and to help us do all of that, our guest this week, we were talking before the show, feels like we've been trying to get him on forever, so we're glad to finally have him. He's a senior baseball writer for NBC Sports and Roto World. You can follow him on Twitter at DJ Short. He hosts a weekly chat on Tuesdays, which wrapped up earlier today. DJ, how you doing, man? It's great to have you on the show.
What's up, guys? Glad I could finally come on the show. It feels like it's been a really long time we've been trying to make this work.
Yeah, I mean, hey, we're excited to have you. There's literally so much going on. We've got trades, we've got injuries, prospects, and you're the right guy to call on to do this, to break all of it down. So we're excited to
have you. I hope so. Good to be here.
So, hey, let's dive into some current events. Probably Clayton Kershaw, I think, is where we need to start. He went just two innings on his start on Sunday. He's out with a back injury now, was put on the disabled list. He's expected to miss the next 4 to 6 weeks. And obviously there's a lot of implications for redraft leagues for the rest of this season. But my focus is looking more a little bit towards next year, DJ. And, you know, as someone who has to evaluate Kershaw's 2018 fantasy stock, I mean, what do you do with Kershaw? Because this is now 2 years in a row that he's suffered a pretty significant back injury. How much does this concern you going forward?
Yeah, it's definitely built into the back of your mind. But I also think, you know, even if you say, you know, when you draft him that you expect maybe he's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks at some point, he's going to have a DL stint, that production that you get even in 3 or 4 months could be better than what most of the pitchers. So, I mean, you know, I don't think it would really ding things too much depending on how he bounces back from this. I know they're saying 4 to 6 weeks right now. I don't know if that's too optimistic. I don't know if they're just saying that because they have such a huge lead in the NL West and they can afford to be conservative. But as of right now, let's just see how things go. Hopefully it's not as serious as last year. That seems to be the case. You know, I'm optimistic right now that he's going to be fine for the postseason, you know, and if he finishes the season strong, I think I'll still feel pretty good about him next year.
So, Mike, obviously all pitchers are just inherently risky, but when you look at Kershaw, I don't think, is there any way you can slide him behind anyone besides, you know, Chris Sale, Max Scherzer? If you want to put Corey Kluber ahead of him, I totally understand that, but Realistically, how far down do you think this drops his 2018 value when you look at the starting pitcher landscape? This has sort of been a recurring topic for us on the show, but how far are you sliding him down a little bit in your mind, at least at this point?
For 2018, I agree with DJ. I don't see how even that – Scherzer, sure. Sale, maybe. Beyond that, how do you move him down? Like it's kind of like DJ said. So right now he's 141 to third innings. He pitched 149 last year, 204 this year to a 169 last year. But you're still talking about an elite special pitcher. And he could come back this year, to DJ's point, and throw another like 20, 30 innings. So I have a hard time moving Kershaw down. This hurts you more in an only league where you're going to lose innings and you have to replace him with somebody. You're going to fall behind in wins and strikeouts. In a mixer, you kind of look at it like, well, I'm getting all these great innings from him, and the replacement level guy is not quite as bad. I'm still drafting Kershaw probably middle to the back of the first round in 2018.
I should also add here, it feels like there's been a real drop-off from the top-tier starting pitchers this year. Jacob deGrom's turned things on recently, Corey Kluber as well, but there's a real drop-off after those guys. So I think you're going to want someone who's really dependable. Clayton Kershaw is amazing. We know that. I think you'd rather take your chance on someone like him, and if he does end up missing time, so be it. But you really want that guy that, if he's healthy, we know he's elite.
Yeah, I just think that's a discussion that we're going to have numerous times during the offseason, so nice to get out in front of it a little bit here. Let's talk about two prospects who were called up within the last week or so. The big one is Yoan Moncada. Pretty much the consensus number one prospect in the game. We sort of know, DJ, what the upside is with Moncada. He has the potential to be a five category guy, but with all the contact issues in his profile right now, how much of an impact do you see him making the rest of the season?
Well, I think the priority for the White Sox should be to play him as much as possible. So I'm not really worried about the playing time if he does struggle. I think his biggest impact this year might be in stolen bases. I think he could make a huge difference in that category. As you said, the approach, does worry me a little bit, the strikeout percentage. So I'm not sure about the batting average right away, but stolen bases will be there, and I think the playing time will be there as well with the rebuilding team who, I think they're really going to be focused on getting him playing time, playing him near the top of the lineup, that sort of thing. So I feel pretty good about him, but I also think that, maybe as this tends to happen with top prospects coming up to the majors, we love our shiny new toys, might be a little bit overrated at the start. But I should also say I'm going to miss people asking me when he's going to be called up. I feel like that's followed me all year long.
Yeah, that's not a fun topic. I'm sure you get those every week in your chat. So
yes,
it's a relief to finally have that era in White Sox history over. Mike, as far as Moncada goes in redraft leagues, obviously if you don't have him already, you missed your window. But he strikes me as a guy who might have a sort of a prolonged adjustment period because of all the contact issues in his profile. I feel like I've soured on him a little bit because he spent so much time at AAA and didn't really make a dent in solving those issues. That to me is a little bit concerning. Am I making too much of that? What are your thoughts on Yoan Moncada? Because I think he's a really polarizing prospect at this point now.
I think you might be making a little bit too much of it. What I don't really get, and to be fair, you weren't here for these discussions, but Javi Baez was a player who struck out a lot more than Moncada. And I know comps are bad. I'm not making the comp, but there was more positivity surrounding Baez and excitement about his profile in terms of strikeouts, at least. I look at Moncada, he struck out 28% of the time in AAA. He struck out 31% in 2016. I'm not suggesting that's good, but in this context where so many players are striking out and it's more acceptable and players are not discouraged from striking out like they were even like 30 years ago, it's a concern to me if it leads to poor contact, but the strikeouts in and of themselves are not a cause for alarm. His BABIP in the minors, was, going backwards is 379, 373, 395. He's making quality contact when he's hitting the ball. Yeah, he could hit 240, maybe even 230. he'll eventually be fine. I really see a player here who is going to be special.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Bryant struck out a lot too in the minor leagues. Mm-hmm. So and he corrected those issues very quickly. So it's a really complicated discussion to have. But I think we all sort of see Moncada as a pretty special prospect, guy who can kind of do it all and really make an impact here. So, yeah, a lot to be excited about with Yoan Moncada. Rafael Devers is the other prospect who got called up by the Red Sox this week, making his first start tonight. We're recording this on Tuesday night, so he'll square off with Felix Hernandez in about an hour or so. So not exactly an easy assignment right out of the gate, but DJ, I think the big question with Devers is not so much the talent, it's the playing time, right? I mean, are they going to play him every day at third base? How do you envision the Red Sox using him the rest of the season?
Well, I think they kind of just want to get a look at him right now. I mean, we're, you know, basically a week out in front of the trade deadline here. So I think they want to get a look at him, see what they have. Before the deadline, see if they think he's ready. Obviously it's a really small sample. So, it could be easy to overreact if he has a really strong, start here. But I think they want to get a look at him, see what he can do. Keep in mind, he's only 20 years old. So, has made some really quick progress in the minors. I think he's a really solid, option for the long term, but, in the short term, I'm sort of wait and see with him in standard mixed leagues. And also because I'm just not sure about that playing time, as you mentioned. You know, are they going to sit him against left-handed pitching? Are they going to pick up somebody at the trade deadline? Maybe somebody who's more of like a utility player they can move around, that sort of thing. So I'm not sure he's going to be an everyday guy necessarily.
The other variable, too, is how much is Hanley Ramirez able to play first base? Is he physically able to go out and do it? Because then that opens up the DH spot too for additional at bats. So the Red Sox have been aggressive with their prospects. You know, Devers was a guy who had exactly zero plate appearances above high A coming into the year, so
yeah,
really a meteoric rise for him. But Mike, Ben Carsley wrote the call up, which is up at BP right now, and Devers is a guy I think we expect him to be able to hit. But how much of an actual fantasy impact should mixed league owners expect the rest of the year?
Yeah, this segues very nicely into my Fab column, and I kind of wrote about this. So if you agree with what Ben wrote in terms of anticipated production this year, which is about a 270 batting average, a 15 to 20 home run pace, that sounds really good. And 4 or 5 years ago, you would have been elated for that. But if you look at how many corner infielders are on pace to hit 20 home runs, there's 47 corner infielders right now that are going to do that. Now, some of them are going to slot in at second base or another position. But even if you take like those 4 or 5 guys out, you know, I made this comp in terms of the stats. Devers, if he does that, will be Yuli Gurriel without the batting average. Or without quite as much batting average. And this isn't a knock, because as DJ points out, he's 20 years old. In real life, if Devers does that, if he hits 270 on a 20 home run pace, that's great. And
that's amazing.
That's a sign of a if not a superstar, like a future like top tier player for fantasy this year. In the context of what everyone else is doing, that makes him borderline in a 15 team mix like Labor or, you know, like the league DJ is in the top mixed draft. So I really like Devers' future potential. But outside of like a really deep mix or an only, his impact might not be as much as something. And the other thing Ben pointed out to me, Devers didn't run this year. And, you know, Ben, we were exchanging DMs on Twitter. You know, he used the term big boy when it comes to Devers. he ran in the low minors. He's not going to run for the Red Sox. And that has an impact, too. Like with steals are so important. And if Devers doesn't run or gets the occasional odd steal, you know, not quite as much value as a guy who hits 20 home runs and maybe steals 5 to 10.
Yeah, he is a hashtag beefy boy, as we like to call him on the Tino podcast. This sort of ties back into the point about, Mike, I thought you brought up a great point with league context, right? Understanding the current fantasy landscape. What makes Moncada a much more attractive fantasy prospect doesn't matter what his strikeout rate is if he's stealing bases, just because there aren't really a lot of guys who are doing that. I think coming into tonight, there were like 20 guys who have double-digit home runs and steals, so it's just such a unique sort of profile. Endeavors, while he may be a better hitter right now, it's maybe less impactful given the depth at third base. DJ, do you sort of agree with that as well? I think we talked a lot about this at first base too, where there's just been such an influx of corner infield talent that it's almost like Devers, no matter what he does, I just don't know if he's going to be that usable in shallow league.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the best way to put it, he's just not going to stand out at the position. And sort of at this point in the season, you're looking for math. Basically, that's what you want. You want the numbers. So don't get too attached to, yeah, he's a top prospect. We all know that. He's probably going to be really good in the long run, but you want the numbers. So that's what I would be focusing on. And in the context of the rest of the league, he just might not stand out this year, but definitely really exciting for the long term.
So I'm not going to subject you both to Trevor Cahill talk, because I could go for the next half hour about Trevor Cahill. Big fan over here. But let's transition here to the Mike's Expert Fab call. And we talked a little about Rafael Devers, who went for $201 in tout mixed. And DJ, that's the league you play in, and it's your first year in the league, right?
That's right. Yeah, I'm in the Tout Wars mixed league draft. Yeah,
so, yeah. There's two tout leagues. There's the mixed auction and the mixed draft. So DJ is in the one that does a straight draft, and it's an online league. It's not an in person one.
Right.
You got to get into the in person auctions. Those are intense.
Someday, hopefully.
Yes, exactly. So how are you enjoying it so far? I guess it'd be my leadoff question. Talk about that.
I've really enjoyed it, actually. I've wanted to do it for a really long time. I think, you know, there was an adjustment about the on-base percentage format, and I went really heavy with on-base percentage in the actual draft and then realized I was really short on power. I had guys like DJ LeMahieu and Christian Yelich. I've since traded each of them, and I got Chris Davis and Robinson Cano in separate deals, so I've sort of balanced my roster a little bit more offensively. I'm currently in third place. Feel pretty good about it. I'm struggling on the starting pitcher side from a wins perspective. I think Yu Darvish hasn't won in like 2 months, so that's really hurting me. But I feel pretty good about my team. I have James Paxton. He's been great since coming off the DL. Big Maple.
George is a huge Paxton fan.
I know he is. I know. So I wanted to mention that. And did you notice last night that they now have something called the Maple Grove in Seattle?
They literally have trees in the outfield bleachers now. It's pretty wild.
It's fantastic. But yeah, I mean, there had been sort of a little adjustment with the on-base percentage, you know, just to think about it from that perspective. And just sort of the whole bidding process, I think, was a little confusing for me at first. As far as the waiver process. So it took me like 1 or 2 weeks to like figure out how I wanted to do that strategy wise. But since I've figured that out, I've turned things around and feel, you know, pretty good about how I'm doing.
Can I ask, so most leagues do you use FAB in most of your leagues, or is it a straight waiver process or a combination?
It's a combination, but I'd say the great majority are sort of like a free-for-all waiver wire situation.
Okay. Yeah, because the tout is unique in that it's $1,000 FAB. Like, I play mostly FAB, but it's 100. And, mm-hmm. you know, the variant is like some leagues, like Labor, AL, there are no $0 bids. Some leagues there are $0 bids. Like, that's probably the big variant. So, yeah, the $1,000 kind of changes things, because what I've found in tout since they switched to that, you want to go early with your big bids, because it's kind of the whole idea, and especially in a mixed, because it's kind of the whole idea of like, well, if I get a guy in April who's going to have a big impact for like, you know, $300 or $400, as opposed to waiting and waiting and waiting, and then in August I get a guy who has a big impact, it makes such a difference.
Right. I remember, I think it was the first week of the first week of bidding, I really wanted Charlie Morton. And I messed up my bid somehow and it didn't go through. And I was just devastated because I was buying into the Charlie Morton hype during spring training. And he's had a pretty decent year, but, you know, I managed to move on and I was okay from that. But yeah, just the mechanics of actually putting the bid through, like I somehow messed that up early on in the season. So I had to like figure out that kind of stuff. But luckily I didn't miss out on anybody huge. I think Bellinger might have been available at some point. So, you know, that's definitely a regret. But for the most part, I feel like the waivers, I think I've done pretty well with those.
So I looked it up. Yu Darvish has not won since June 12th at Houston.
There you go.
Which is pretty wild. That's like seven starts.
He could end up with the Dodgers, and I would love that, actually.
That would be good. By the way, Charlie Morton, 7 shutout innings with 9 strikeouts tonight.
Maybe I do have some regret.
I don't know. That's his first good start in a little while here. So, all right, Mike, who did we want to talk about in the mixed portion of the Fab review? Because there are just so many different types of players. Noah Syndergaard
was a light
here,
week.
And Jason Hamill. Like, what? What is happening here?
Well, you know, outside of Devers, there's probably not a lot to talk about. It was a pretty quiet week, and I was pretty negative about most of these guys. You know, it was Zach Davies, who actually had a really good outing tonight against the Nationals, I was down on. I just wasn't feeling him, and, you know, some of it is that pitchers like that, and I mentioned about Jason Hamill later. You know, pitchers who have such a fine line in terms of their velocity and their command, and in Davies's case, he needs a changeup to thrive. If something goes a little bit wrong, it just all goes south. Whereas a guy who has velocity, you can tend to trust a little bit more. And, you know, maybe Davies will turn it around, but I just don't have faith in him. You know, the Syndergaard bit, and, you know, DJ, we talk about this a lot on the show. You can't speculate. You can't make spec bids in the labor leagues on minor leaguers or players on the DL. And you can do it in tout.
Right.
And I find that strategy in tout really interesting. And I believe this was Fred Zinke, is this the first time you've played against Fred, DJ?
I play with him in the Yahoo Friends and Family League this
year,
but it's a
family. That's right.
Yeah. But I think that's his first year in that format as well. So I have gotten a few trade offers from him. I should say
he's probably, it's a battle between him and Tristan Cockcroft, but Fred is maybe the toughest player I've played against. Like he's really, really good. And part of where he's good is in season, like between the trades and the pickups, he's just relentless. He just never, like, he grinds. And, you know, the biggest thing for me with a lot of these leagues, when you're in so many of them, sometimes you lose a week or something's going on and you know, maybe you miss a move. He just never misses a trick. And that Syndergaard move for $20.
That's awesome.
Could be the best move of the week. Like if Syndergaard does nothing and he doesn't come back and, you know, he's a Met, so he probably, you know, won't come back. Because, you know, when you're a Met all your life. You know, you're hurt from the day that you're born till you die. But, Like Syndergaard is just somebody who, if he pitches like for 4 weeks and he's even near the level he was at, that's a win.
That's pretty stunning. I don't know if that's just a matter of just his due diligence of paying attention, that he was able to get him for that. And there were no other bids, at least according to what I can see here.
Oh.
That's pretty crazy. I mean, that's just a great lottery ticket. I know this week, I believe he has to have him on his active roster. So you lose that a little bit. But I mean, in the grand scheme of things, that's really not a big deal. I love that bid. That's great.
It's a little bit tougher in mixed than it is in an only to carry those zeros for a week. But I agree. It's still a very savvy move. But yeah. George, answer your question. You know, as far as a lot of these other bids, you know, Ben Revere is just kind of a straight steals move. I was fairly negative about Jason Hayward. I see Cub fans on Twitter. I know I have some listeners and followers here who listen to the show. I'm really sorry. I really like Jason Hayward as a person. You know, I think he's a great guy, but it's just not working out offensively for the Cubs. Like he's been really bad now for a year and a half.
Yeah, I want to tie back into something that you guys mentioned a little while ago about, you know, paying attention to not only your roster, but what everyone else is doing. I found that some of, at least in my own experience, some of my most valuable moves I've made, whether it's the, you know, Fab or trades, mostly through free agent waiver wire claims, is when another owner drops somebody that's a viable option. You know what I mean? I just think you always have to be on the lookout because certain owners have different tolerance levels for production. And, you know, a guy like Whit Merrifield may go on the slide for 2 weeks and he gets dropped. And, you know, maybe he's a guy who can help your roster. So Those are the things I'd always advise for everyone listening to this podcast who's not, you know, not playing an expert league, is you have to always be paying attention to who is available, and you just never know what's going to happen. So I found that to be extremely valuable. I mean, in your experience, what are some of, is that one of the biggest things for you that you've noticed as well, that you have to really pay attention to what the rest of your league is doing, not just your own roster?
Yeah, I mean, I actually noticed this year, actually in this league, someone I believe dropped Justin Smoke, maybe the first or second week of the season, and someone was savvy enough to be like, hey, you know, I'm seeing some trends here that I like, and was able to pick him up for really a reasonable price. I did a similar thing with Josh Harrison, was dropped 1 week for, you know, up, maybe a temporary upgrade somewhere. I took note that he was dropped that week. I made sure to pick him up the next week. He's fallen off a bit recently, but gave me a little boost temporarily. So yeah, those are prime situations to really watch the moves in your league, see who's being dropped, anticipate. These are all things that can make a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, two guys on the pitching side I noticed a lot, Brad Peacock and Zach Godley. I think at one point Godley got demoted just because of a numbers crunch in Arizona. So right. He got cut in a ton of places, and he's been really incredible this year. And Brad Peacock's had some real up and down starts, and his role's kind of up in the air. So he's a guy who may have been out there at a certain period. So, yeah, always be paying attention and speculating, as I like to say. So, Mike, was there anybody, I mean, Jabari Blashear, great names on this, Chris Smith, Alex Meyer went on the DL. I don't think there's anybody in the mix that we need to talk about, do we?
No, we get to the point in the mix, and DJ, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, it's a redraft, so you start to see some teams, you know, and this is one of the, I've said this before, it's one of the dirty secrets about mixed league or about expert leagues. People fall off, and you know, you think that happens in your home league, but even in the expert leagues, people start to fall off, and there isn't as much movement, and it's a good opportunity to kind of sit back and be like, well, I don't need to spend all my fab on somebody. I can actually be conservative. You know, I know you bought I think you bought Gerardo Parra this week, right, DJ?
I did, yeah. And I think I knew that he hurt his calf or something like that, but I didn't really pay super close attention. I put an $85 bid on him. I just thought he'd be an upgrade over Robbie Grossman, who gives you on base percentage, but really not much else. Waiting for Steven Piscotty to come off the DL. So I just thought temporarily I'll put him in there. I can obviously put him in reserve eventually. I know there's sort of a time crunch in that outfield in Colorado, but you look at the way he's been swinging the bat this year, plays half his games in Coors Field. Thought as well worth taking a shot on him.
Yeah, and somebody, I don't know if it was Troy Rennick or one of the, you know, Rockies beats reported that Desmond's calf is bothering him again. So that might turn out to be a really good move for you.
Interesting.
Also, it doesn't sound like David Dahl's coming up anytime soon, at least.
That's true. That's an injury. That's unfortunate.
Yeah. I thought he was going to be really good coming into the year. And then, that's unfortunate. So here in the onlys, you know, there's not a lot to say with JD Martinez. Mike, walk us through the process here for who won the bid, how, you know, what the strategies were, and who else are we expecting to come over here? So how is this shaking out? I know there's a lot to unpack with that, but walk us through the tout NL landscape real quick here, because I think it's fascinating.
Well, so what's kind of interesting about this, so Derek Carty won out on Martinez, and I won Quintana last week. I had the most fab, and I made a tactical move. I cut Juris Familia after he was hurt because you can reclaim the injury money. And the calculation I made was that I'll get a better player for him with guaranteed health, you know, around the trade deadline. So I essentially traded Familia for Quintana. And the certainty of Quintana. So I'm not going to win. My team has tanked. I've had more injuries in this league than I think any league I've been in. Maybe it's a close second. I think I'm up to 12 or 13 players of my original 23 actives who have been on the DL at one point. It's pretty brutal. So nevertheless, you know, in terms of the strategy, though, it worked out. So Derek Carty could have bid on Quintana. He had more money. But he has all these pitching points. He did have Kershaw. You know, hindsight's a beautiful thing. He didn't realize that, you know, Kershaw get hurt. So he waited for the hitter. And it paid off for him in that JD Martinez came over and he outbid Tristan Cockcroft, who had the second highest amount of money. Now, Tout NL at this point is realistically a two-team race. It's Gray Albright, who's way up, a friend of the podcast, who's way up with 107 points. And Tristan's second with 93, but, you know, he could catch him, you know, given the vagaries of 5x5. In terms of other players coming over, it's tough because, you know, remember when a couple months ago, the conventional wisdom was that all the talent was going to go over to the American League. The thinking was that there were so many teams out of it. There weren't a lot of contenders in the NL. The races were pretty settled. So with the exception of six or seven teams, all the trades would be NL to AL. But almost every big trade we've seen so far has been the other way. And it's still possible. There was a rumor tonight that Sonny Gray and Yonder Alonso could be going to the Yankees, so that wouldn't change anything. But there's still some players on the non-contending AL teams that could move. And meanwhile, the biggest move so far, and he wasn't reflected this week as it happened after Sunday, was Trevor Cahill. It's always the thing about Fab. It's generally not a good idea to hang on to your bankroll in an only because you just never know what's going to happen. Like I brought this up, this old example to George, DJ. Remember the year that Adrian Gonzalez was traded to the Red Sox, that big blockbuster?
Right, in August.
Yeah, and that was, I believe that was 2012. I'm sorry I don't have like total recall for...
It sounds about right.
Five or 6 years ago. But Steve Gardner that year of USA Today was sitting on a pile of Fab. And, you know, part of it was, you know, he had a lot of injuries. His team was in decent shape. And the player who came over, do you remember, DJ, the player who came over right before the deadline from the AL to the NL? Do you remember who the big player was at the trade deadline?
I don't off the top of my head. No.
George won't because he's young and, you know, wasn't it
like Matt Holliday? I feel like it was Matt Holliday. Someone like that.
Well, it was a trick question. The big player was Travis Snyder.
Gross.
So Steve, like, you know, was sitting there and he just threw a big bundle of money on Travis Snyder. He's like, well, like, you know, I got to get somebody. And then, two and a half weeks later, and it was 2012, by the way, 2.5 weeks later, there was this big blockbuster. And I remember the second highest amount of Fab because no one came over. It was like Snyder and nobody else. So whoever the second highest amount of Fab got Gonzalez, and then like a third person, you know, got, I think there was like another player, you know, and Steve's sitting there like, you know, what the F? But, you know, the lesson here is that it's really difficult to, like, if you've been sitting on the Fab in Tout in the AL or NL, there's just no guarantees. And Derek and I got kind of lucky in that some good players came over, but it's entirely possible that I could have wound up sitting on a pile of cash. The best time to send a pile of cash is if you are in first or second or maybe third and have a really good team and don't have a lot of holes and, you know, you've been lucky with the injuries and you can just kind of wait for that like big player.
So does it make it a little more complicated that the moves have been staggered a little bit because Quintana was in a totally separate Fab cycle and now Martinez is in his own cycle and now you're going to have the moves that come up later this week in the next one? So does that complicate the equation a little bit for you when you're looking at this?
For me it doesn't, and judging
but just from a general standpoint, right, it's not all condensed in one, you know, 4-hour period at the deadline, you know what I mean?
Well, you know what? Let me defer to DJ because, you know, I he is our guest. So, DJ, I know that – do you play mostly in mixed leagues as opposed to onlys, or do you do some onlys?
I play in NL only, but it's a score sheet league. So that's a whole other thing.
Okay. So you don't really have the Fab, like, league, like, interleague trading experience, I guess.
I've done that before, but I've bailed on those leagues. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of tough. So – I would say that, you know, my strategy and Derek's strategy, we kind of bid like there was no tomorrow. You know, I know a better example, if you go down the line, I think where people waited, it's the Sean Doolittle, Ryan Madsen examples. So, you know, this week, because they came over on Sunday, but Tout has a rule where there's like a 24-hour cooling off period. And, you know, it kind of makes sense. Like if there's a trade on a Sunday, like if something happens at 11 p.m., it's not really fair to like just let's, you know, the one person online who's still awake take advantage.
Right.
So, you know, Sean Doolittle went for 375 and almost all of, I think it was Lenny Melnick's money. And, you know, Madsen went for 237 to Gardner. But that's kind of an example of where people drew the line and they were like, well, you know, Sean Doolittle has two saves, but I'm not going to blow the bank on him, even though if he is the closer on a great team and could get the saves the rest of the way with a really good ERA and whip, you know, because that's what he's been doing all year. So to answer your question, George, you know, for a player like Martinez or Quintana, who maybe aren't quite elite, but might very well be the best players to come over, you bid. For that next level down, like a closer like Doolittle, but he might not be the closer all year, you kind of hang back. What I found interesting, Andy Behrens of Yahoo put a big bid on Antonio Sensatella. I feel like there was some anxiousness there where the idea was, well, I'm not going to win anyway. Like I don't have enough money, or I'm sixth or seventh in the pecking order, and you know he was even lower. I'm just going to get the guy I want now.
Hmm. Yeah. So DJ, who are some of the names that you're keeping an eye on? Because you obviously have your, you know, I'd say ear to the ground, but you're probably face glued to Twitter. Who are some of the names that you're watching about? You're watching that you anticipate being moved within the next couple of days here. You know, there's the obvious examples. You know, like Mike mentioned, Sonny Gray, Yonder Alonso, Yu Darvish could potentially be on the move. But who are some of the names that you're keeping a close eye on that fantasy owners should be as well?
Well, I'm a Mets fan, so that shouldn't be a surprise if you follow me on Twitter. So we know they're trying to move some guys, Addison Reed. And I think he's probably attracting the most interest of any player on the Mets. No surprise there. So, I mean, that's obviously something to pay attention to for fantasy owners. Where he ends up next, he might not be a closer, might end up in a setup role, so that's something to keep in mind. I saw something interesting, actually, just right before jumping on with you guys. The Rockies have interest in Jonathan Lucroy, which, obviously, he's had a really terrible year, but you think about him in Coors Field, definitely a chance that he can finish strong down the stretch. So I think that's something interesting to keep an eye on if you're in an NL-only league. And obviously, Sonny Gray, Yu Darvish, I'll be watching that. I feel like I've, when I do my news shifts on RotoWorld, I feel like half of them right now about Sonny Gray or Yu Darvish, whether they're going to be traded or not, which teams are interested. So definitely tracking those guys as much as possible.
Mike, who's the guy that you're paying close attention to? Because I'll give you mine here in a minute, but who's a name that you're keeping an eye on that you think could really be impacted by a trade here?
Well, the player I think might get traded. I don't know how much of a fantasy impact he'll have because he'll probably set up. But Brad Hand, you know, the Padres bullpen was pretty much emptied, or a couple guys moved to the Royals. So it's that question for me. If Hand gets traded, he'll probably set up because just about every team that's looking at relief has a closer, at least among the contenders. You know, if Hand stays in San Diego, you know, obviously his value really spikes because he's been really good this year. And I know there's still some talk of how Carter Capps could come back, but
no.
if Hand isn't moved, he's already really good, but add some saves to that, and you're looking at a best like middle reliever this side of Felipe Rivera this year.
Yeah, I had to write up the transaction analysis for that Kansas City and San Diego trade, and it's like it just feels inevitable that Brad Hand, given the market for elite left-handed relief pitching, and just his value can't possibly get any higher than it is given his performance. So it just kind of feels like a matter of time before he's on the move. And DJ, I like Kirby Yates in that situation, by the way. He's been good so far. Do you like Yates as well?
I do. It's actually really shocking. If you look at the numbers he's posted since being in San Diego, I think he has a sub-2 ERA. I think if you go by swinging strike percentage, he's a top five among relievers. It's ridiculous. I've seen there's a little bit of a velocity spike, but I haven't had a chance to really watch him that much. But, I mean, you know, this is a guy who kind of, I believe the Angels designated him for assignment in April.
They did, yeah. Whoops.
So, yeah, I mean, he's been great. The Padres recently called up Phil Maton, so he's another guy to keep an eye on. He's been pretty good since being called up. He was a closer with AAA El Paso, yeah. So another name to keep an eye on in that situation.
Yeah, Maton's 24. I know they really like him, but Yates, like you mentioned, the strikeout rate, he's up over 13 per nine. He is I was looking at the BP Pitch FX leaderboards. Mike and I have been touting him now. It feels like we talk about him on every show. This might be a segment, good. But his swinging strike rate on his fastball is like 40%.
Wow.
It's like up there with, you know, Kimbrel and guys like that. So just to give you an idea of how good Kirby Yates is, if you're in a deep league, like that's a speculative pickup I would be making this week. The situation, I'll ask you guys for your favorite, like, sort of off the radar player that you think maybe has a chance to get dealt. But the situation I'm watching, not only is Zach Britton with the Orioles, but what do the Dodgers do? Because it feels like they have so many assets at the minor league level and on their big league roster. When you look at a guy like Brock Stewart, who's going to start tomorrow on Wednesday, like he's a guy who'd start for most teams at this point. You have guys like Alex Verdugo, Willie Calhoun, Walker Buehler. Like, they have so many prospects who are on the cusp of the majors that I want to see where they go. They've been linked to Yu Darvish, to Zach Britton, and all these different teams. But I think what the Dodgers do is really going to have sort of a trickle-down effect. And DJ, what's a – give me, like, a random name that you think, you know, maybe there it's a slim possibility, but they could get dealt. Who's a guy like that you look at who could be on the move?
I mean, Jacob deGrom probably is the top guy. I don't know how much of this is real or if it's just conversation on Mets Twitter about the Astros, you know, who we've heard linked to a starter. They obviously have the pieces to pull off a trade like that. I would think that would be one where, you know, the Astros could potentially blow them away with an offer and maybe they'd listen to it.
That's fascinating. I love that. I wouldn't like it if DeGrom got traded. He's fantastic, and that would be bad for Mets fans. But, Mike, who's a guy for you that you think could get dealt that would be pretty shocking?
Well, the big blockbuster would be Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah.
There's been some buzz around that, and, you know, kind of like DJ, there's some buzz here in Philly, and I can't really tell how much of it is just the reporters here and the radio guys here in particular talking it up versus any kind of reality. You know, Matt Klentak has made one trade in the last year and a half, and, you know, any trades he makes at the deadline, you know, Pat Neshek will probably go for sure. The problem for the Phillies have is a lot of their other major league pieces are not enticing, to say the least. So if he was going to empty the farm out and, you know, make a deal, you know, Sixto Sanchez won't get dealt. But beyond that, like, if he was going to make a big deal for somebody and kind of tell the fans, like, look, you know we're not going to win in 2 or 3 years, but this is a sign that we're here and we're ready to contend. I don't see it. You know, I asked Craig Mish of Sirius, who's in the Florida market, if he had heard about that down there the other way. And what he told me was he's like, well, you know, I believe the sources in Philly, you know, and the people, you know, who are talking about are legitimate people, but I haven't heard that on this end down here, you know, and from what he says, it sounds like a Stanton trade is really unlikely.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, but that's the fun thing about the deadline. Like, every once in a while there is a trade, and I'll probably be another one of these guys. Like, there's a trade that just shocks you and you're like, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe this guy got moved. And it doesn't happen every year, but that's the excitement of the deadline.
Yeah, like DJ brought up, I think DeGrom would be that kind of name for me. That'd be like, wow, I didn't even think he was available. So you'd have to get blown away to move a guy like him or Stanton. But, you know, I would have thought the same thing about Eloy Jimenez. Like, I did not think he was a guy who would get traded. So I wouldn't rule anything out at this point. Prospect wise, you know, so we'll see what happens. It's gonna be fun. Last topic here I do want to cover, and it's about trading away depth, because I feel like this is the time of the year where if you're making a championship run, you're still at the point where you might have some additional depth, and you can look to deal that off. DJ, I want to start with you. Is that something that you look at in a league where you're kind of eliminating the extra pieces on your roster? For example, if I'm, you know, if I have a league where I have extra depth at catcher, like I'm looking to deal that extra catcher, you know what I mean? Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly been in those situations even this year where I've had an excess of closers.
Yeah.
Actually, the deal where I believe it was the deal I got Robinson Cano, I traded Edwin Diaz as part of that deal because I had four closers. I had Greg Holland, who obviously is like leading the world in saves. I got lucky with that. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things where, like I said from the beginning, this is about the numbers. It's about the math. So at a certain point, you just don't want to get too attached to the players who've done well for you. And if you could use them and upgrade in other areas, you certainly go for it. I have Trey Turner and Yahoo Friends and Family, and I'm way ahead in stolen bases. So at a certain point in the year, I was like, you know, I'm going to wait until maybe, you know, July, right around this time, and then, you know, trade him to upgrade another area, get a starting pitcher. That obviously didn't work out because Trey Turner's out for a while. But those are the kind of situations you look for when you have an advantage in saves, you have an advantage in steals, and try to upgrade in other areas.
That's a really good point. Mike, do you find yourself doing that as well at this time of the year? I know you've done it in past years, and we've talked a lot about it on this show, but I think it's something worth bringing up because we're not at the point where there's the trade deadline in most leagues, so I think there's still some time to act here. But is that something you look to do as well?
Yeah, I made a trade in labor. I flipped Masahiro Tanaka for Ken Giles, and I was trying to get saves, you know, and it kind of worked out in the weird sense that I have Kona Kayla, and I was waiting on him, and I just made the decision like, well, you know, if I wait on him and wait on him, he just might not close, and I might be waiting for nothing. I wanted to kind of lock in the category, and I looked at it like, well, if Tanaka gets better, that's well and good, but I you know, he pitched to about a five or a little under that, and the strikeouts were there, but I was like, well, you know, I'm not going to lose. And some of that, too, is the team I traded him to, it was kind of lower in the standings. So if he moves up, it's like, well, you know, good for him, but it doesn't really impact me. Yeah, sure. This is a good time to start looking at those kind of moves and looking at your excesses. You know, one thing, DJ, about the only leagues is you seldom tend to have that. Like, it's just much more difficult to be in a situation where you have four closers or you have a ridiculous amount of power. So you have to kind of make those decisions. Kind of a follow-up to that, DJ, have you found, you know, I know you've played in, you know, played in Friends and Family, now you're in Tout. Have you found that the experts are kind of conservative compared to some of the home leagues you're in terms of trading?
You know, that's a good point, actually. I actually feel it's probably more active in some of the more casual leagues. I don't know if it's because experts are afraid to make a mistake, and maybe it'll be publicized a bit more. But I certainly have found that.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, I made a trade in CBSAL, and it has not gone well. And now I'd be a little concerned to make another one. You know what I mean?
In our Dynasty Guru Experts League, I made a huge trade last year. And I think I traded Max Scherzer, Jose Abreu, you know, a couple other guys, just a full out rebuild. I think I got AJ Reed in the deal, Jorge Mateo. Like, that has not worked out great for me. I did get Benintendi in the deal, so I felt good about that. But it was one of those, like, I traded all my veterans for like a whole slew of top prospects.
Right.
But I think, you know, people are afraid to make mistakes. I think it's in a league where people are watching you. So I think that's definitely the case.
I forgot we're both in that league, but we're not on a Dynasty podcast, so I didn't bring it up. But that's a great point. Like, I traded like seven people for Victor Robles last year. So that one worked out. But then I traded Tyler Glasnow for Dan Vogelback. So that has not worked out. you just never know. I don't know. Yeah. All right. So, hey, DJ, anything you want to plug before we let you go here? You've been really generous with us. You've given us like an hour here of your time. So what are you working on right now for Roto World and NBC Sports that our listeners should go check out?
Well, my weekly column is Waiver Wired. It comes out on Thursday. I go through Waiver Wire for mixed leagues, NL only, AL only. So every Thursday, check that out. We have the Roto World Baseball podcast comes out on Fridays. I do a weekly live chat on Tuesdays. And the football side of things on RotoWorld, we have a RotoWorld football draft guide. So if you're into fantasy football, you should definitely check that out as well.
Give us one sleeper for fantasy football. Everybody loves sleepers. I know you have one. Who's your guy?
I'm not a football person. So okay. I'm the wrong person to ask.
Hey, you're like me. You're not a football guy.
I'll defer to RotoPat on Twitter, at RotoPat. Ask him, and he'll help you out. He's also a good baseball follow as well.
Do you play fantasy football at all, DJ, or no?
I play an NBC Office League, which I actually won last year. But I have no idea.
You're holding out on us. Come on.
You won the league. I have no idea what I'm doing. I follow the RotoWorld football rankings, and I won. So that's the best endorsement I could give.
Are you a fan of the Ravens since you're from Maryland, or are you not really a fan of anybody? Like, what do you have a team?
I was a huge Washington NFL football fan.
Ah, okay.
But that has tapered off in recent years. But I'll still watch their games.
I feel like it might be better to have no knowledge at all and go into a draft. You know what I mean? Maybe that's better. You have no biases going.
Right.
In.
I mean, I'm baseball pretty much 24/7 now. So, you know, when I get free time, I'm just like watching movies and watching Netflix and stuff like that. Like I've had to block out paying super close attention to other sports.
Well, hey, DJ, thank you so much again for joining us. Best of luck surviving the trade deadline. And it's about to be a crazy time for you writing up everything. So best of luck and thanks for coming on.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, so you have it. DJ Short, he's a senior baseball writer for NBC Sports and RotoWorld. You can follow him on Twitter at DJ Short. So that's going to do it for us. We're going to take a quick break, and then Mike and I will come back and wrap up the show. We're back. Thank you for listening to episode 143 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Just a reminder, you can read us at baseballprospectus.com. Mike has his expert fab reviews up there. We have so many call-ups and trade analysis, transaction analysis pieces up there right now with the deadline coming up. It's going to be a busy week for us. I'm geared up on the caffeine side. Mike, what do you drink for caffeine? Do you drink caffeine at all? Are you a coffee guy?
Yeah, I'm a coffee guy. I used to be a really big coffee guy, but I've kind of cut back to like just, you know, 2 cups.
Good. I have my Keurig is all fired up. It's ready to roll. So I'm excited. Let's get some deals done, man. Looking forward to it. So you can follow us on Twitter. Mike is at Mike Gianella. I am at George Bissell. That is the best way to get in touch with us if you have a fantasy question any time of the day. If you don't have the bat signal, just hit us up on Twitter. We'll do our best to get back to you. If you can subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio app, or wherever you get your podcast, that's the best way to support us. We do this every week for free because we love fantasy baseball. And this, you know, we want to provide the best possible show. So that would help us out tremendously if you could do that. I want to thank our guest once again, DJ Short from NBC Sports and Roto World. He's great. You can follow him on Twitter as well, at DJ Short. He hosts a chat every Tuesday. If you have fantasy questions, hit him up there on Roto World. So, Mike, anything else? I think we're good. We pretty much covered it all today.
We ran out of time to talk about Kyle Lloyd. What a shame.
Did Cespedes really just hit home run?
Yeah, Cespedes just homered off of Lloyd, and I think it was Bruce just narrowly missed one.
Oh, I got it. We need him to face the Brewers. That way we can get a Lloyd Braun.
Yeah, that's on that's good.
Lloyd Braun. All right, that's gonna do it. We're done. I'm out of here. For Mike Giannello and George Bissell. Say thanks for listening. Brett Sayer, he's coming back next week.
I miss that guy. I forgot about him.
Yeah, he's been on hiatus, so we're going to have to pick his brain next week. We'll have a lot to talk about. Post-trade deadline show coming up next week. So until then, so long, everybody.
Bye-bye.
everybody, we're back. You know why? Because we forgot the mailbag segment. So, Mike Gianella here with George Bissell. George Bissell here with Mike Gianella, and we're going to dive into the mailbag questions that we didn't get to on the show with DJ Short. So, hey, let's do it. Let's talk about first question here. It's from CJ. He wants to know, in a quality start keeper, Mike, would you rather have Lance McCullers and his injury history or Michael Fulmer and his lack of strikeouts? Interesting question.
The numbers this year tell me Fulmer, but I feel like you have to go with the upside of McCullers. You know, what kind of makes this tough is because it's quality start, you have a better shot, or there's a wider gap with Fulmer because you don't need to rely on the wins. But yeah, I think I still want McCullers, and I know it's a risk. But if you have a choice between those two pitchers, you're probably not an AL only, and I want to take the McCullers risk.
I want to pull up Fulmer's player page here because I feel like what it tells me is going to validate something, I believe. Here we go. Fulmer. Okay. There it is. Okay. Here's my thing about Michael Fulmer. All right. I don't think the strikeouts matter necessarily. He gave up a home run tonight. So that's 9 home runs in about 130 something innings this year. His DRA is 3. So I don't so much care about strikeout rate. He's got 51% ground ball rate. The BABIP is 272. He's been under 275 each of the last 2 years. Like, he's pitching in Comerica. That's a great place to pitch. I just think there's so much less risk with a guy like Fulmer, right? Like, if you're in a position where you're going to be contending and you need the innings and you need a guy you can rely on, I think I'd lean Fulmer. But I totally understand the argument for McCullers. Next question is from Max Margolis. He says, Scooter Gennett is number 14 in weighted on base percentage since June 7th, the day after he hit 4 home runs in a single game. Please dive in. Thank you. Well, Scooter Gennett. Do we have to care about Scooter Gennett? Or have we really reached that point?
I think we have. I agree with that. He's been good enough. And he has middle infield eligibility, and second base isn't nearly as good as it was last year. You remember coming into the year, everyone talked about, oh, there's so many second basemen. It's a deep position. It's better than third base. It hasn't really played out that way. If you look at second base, you know, yeah, you have Altuve, you have Daniel Murphy, you still have the cast of characters at the top.
Chris Taylor.
But it really, what?
Chris Taylor.
Yeah, Chris Taylor, but it really, who we all expect to do this, but
yeah.
It really drops off. And as a result, you know, do I think Scooter Gennett is going to be this good? No, but that's a great point about his, you know, about his stats after the 4 home run game. This isn't, his stats aren't being buoyed just by that one game. He's not a fluke. He's done something different to make me believe that he can still be, you know, like a 20 home run guy, maybe a little bit better than that, particularly in that park. And yeah, it sounds really weird, but I trust him. And the Reds, it sounds like, are, at least for us this year, committed to him over Jose Peraza at second base, or at least as long as Gennett continues hitting.
All right, he's fine in a redraft. I think we have to view it from more of a long-term perspective. When you look at his profile, he doesn't steal bases. He's got 2 steals in 83 games. He's been caught once. The batting average, he's hitting .313, but like the BABIP is crazy. It's .349. He's never been over, I think, .320 at any point in his career, really. So he's like at around a .310, .315 career BABIP. So you regress that a little bit, you're probably looking at a guy who's a .280 hitter with, like you said, 20 to 25 home runs. That's basically Jonathan Scope with batting average, right? That's what he is.
Really, yeah, okay. Yeah, although right? The funny thing about that is, you know, well, Jonathan Scope has a batting average this year. Scope's hitting, what, .308 or three? Scope's hitting something ridiculous right now.
I haven't committed you, much veered time into, to you, thinking
you,
about.
Yeah, you've moved us into a different discussion.
Yeah. Well, maybe intentionally, because, like, Jeanette, fine. But a lot of it's going to depend where he bats, right? He has a lot more counting stat value.
Jonathan Scope is hitting 304, so I
where did
I was,
that come from? What?
I have no idea. What's his?
He had, like, a 300 on base percentage last year.
He has a 338 BABIP, although the thing about Scope is that 305 last year, but 329 in 2015. So that's not actually as out of line as you expect.
No, but to wrap up on Jeanette, right? If they move on from Zach Cozart and Jeanette all of a sudden is batting second every day in front of Joey Votto and Adam Duvall, I think he has a lot more fantasy value moving forward. But if he's batting like seventh or eighth or whatever, you know, I'm not as interested in him going forward. But yes, you do have to care about Scooter Jeanette. Do we have any other questions? Did we get any?
I didn't see any, but sometimes you get some that are not.
Oh, I got one. Phil Mendelson wants to know, what kind of numbers are you looking at for Brock Stewart the rest of the season? maybe
that should probably be all you. You're the Stewart believer.
That is totally in my lane. Well, here's the thing. Brock Stewart. He is not allowed to run this season. He has thrown 13 innings. He has 10 strikeouts in those 13 innings. What I like about Stewart is, well, the Dodgers' defense, right? They're like number one in defense, park-adjusted defensive efficiency this year. So that's going to help a guy like this over a huge sort of sample size. We've already seen it. Why is Alex Wood putting up the numbers he's putting up? Well, he has the best defense in the league behind him, cleaning up all those ground balls. So I like Stewart quite a bit. I think in deeper leagues, he's going to have some value. Not a ton of strikeouts, but, you know, a strikeout per inning. He's got really good command for a guy who's kind of new to pitching, right? He's kind of late to the party there. But, yeah, I think he's interesting. I don't know whether this is a showcase or not. That's the thing with Stewart for me that I wonder about. Like, are they starting him tomorrow so a team can get another look at him? Or what? I don't know, but I'm fascinated by Brock Stewart. I think he could, like, if you were going to the Dodgers and you were going to trade him to the Orioles for Zach Britton, isn't this the type of guy you'd go after if you were the Orioles? Like, he's 25, he's under team control for the next few years. This is the type of guy I'd be going after. So that way I don't have to start Wade Miley, right?
Well, he's an upgrade on Miley. I don't know if Stewart by himself is going to get you Britton.
No, you'd probably have to throw in Alex Verdugo to make that happen. I don't know. Just a thought.
I don't know either, but I like Stewart. I'm not as jazzed as you are, but I do like him. I do notice there's a big spike in his change uses just this year, which is really intriguing. Like, if he did this over the course of a season, he's throwing his change 32% of the time.
Yeah, it's his best swing and miss pitch. I mean,
yeah, I know. It's like, even for that though, like, if you go back and look at like the guys I think of, you know, I know one of these guys like stinks now, but James Shields and Cole Hamels were peak like change guys, like the guys you'd watch and be like, yeah, you know, they work off the change, they're really good. You know, in Shields' case, like, when he improved is when with sequencing, where it's like, okay, well, yeah, your change is great, but if you don't know how to sequence them, you're done. And yeah, I'm looking at Shields. His first 2 years was 34% and 30%, and then he kind of tailed off, but he was still in like the mid to high 20s. So,
do you still have Stewart's usage in pitch usage in front of you? Because I feel like he doesn't really have a good third pitch from what I've watched of him. I mean, he doesn't really throw it in relief. He's going out there and throwing 2 to 3 innings at a time, and, you know, it's mostly just fastball changeup. Is he using the third pitch at all?
Got a slider that he uses 10% of the time.
Yeah, it's not great, but but
I'm
like
guessing a show me. Probably.
Yeah, exactly. My point on Stewart is, like, the Dodgers are only going to let him face what 18 batters probably each time. Like, he's not going to go more than a handful of innings, just because that's how they'd want to use him as a starter. But, like, I think the 3 or 4 innings he's going to give you are better than what you're going to get throwing a dart with, like, I don't know, Jolie Chacin is my point. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's less risk.
It's interesting you say that. So I was listening to, I think it was a Towers of Power podcast, and they were going off on, I don't remember the pitcher, but they're going off on pitchers going through the lineup like the fourth time. Oh, it was Alex Cobb, I think it was.
Yeah, the fourth time. They're going ridiculous. Off on that. Why?
They were going off on like him facing the line the fourth time, and the point they made was, you know, unless you're like working on no hitter, or you know, unless you're Clayton Kershaw or Max Scherzer, bring in a reliever. Like there's just no good that can come of that. But a team like the Dodgers, and you're seeing this more and more, like they're getting so savvy where it's like, well, you know, unless it's a game that we know we're losing and the starter's going to eat innings, or unless we're up 8-2 and can afford to give up a run or two, they're pulling guys like Stewart out after that third time.
Yeah.
And it really makes a difference in terms of value, because all you're really getting, unless you get lucky, is it's all downhill from there for a lot of pitchers. Like Adam Wainwright's example on the other end of the spectrum. Adam Wainwright this year, he's a guy who, well, he has some nights he doesn't have it, but then there's nights where he has it, and you see him clearly get tired.
Yeah,
the third time through.
The Cardinals have done this a bunch of times. They did it with Mike Leake. Remember the Kyle Schwarber grand slam? Like, there was no way Mike Leake should have still been in that game. It was ridiculous. And
Dave Roberts is good at this, and there's a couple other managers out there good at this. They're really good at recognizing, like, well, some pitchers and a lot of pitchers, like, twice through the lineup, they're fine.
Yeah, I have
third,
this issue.
The third time, it's like, yeah, like you're playing with fire.
Right, it's just a numbers game. It's just like simple math at this point. Like, this is my gripe with the way the Brewers handled Jimmy Nelson, too. Like, you saw it the other day. I think it was in his start against Philly. Like, they brought him out for the seventh, and it was like third or fourth time. It might have been the fourth time through the order, and like, he gave up a game-tying home run to Odubel Herrera, and it's like, well, you didn't have to, like, you had Oliver Drake ready to go. Like, why wouldn't you just use him? I don't know. That's a good point. I like progressive teams that are smart about using their pitchers that way, because then they avoid these huge blow-up innings that can really do some damage. All right, that's it. We're done. There's enough mailbag questions. If you have one for next week, hit us up on Twitter. Brett will be back. Mike will be back. I'll be here as well. So until our next show, see you, everybody.
Bye-bye.